Well, welcome everybody. I want to just let everybody know that listens to this broadcast, you know, for the last 9 years, that we have some very special guests today on Weatherby House Church. There's been a tremendous need to educate people regarding the early history of the United States, really, you know, kind of from the time of the 13 colonies and the founding of the United States. And we've got three people that are very qualified today to do that. We've got a gentleman, Walt Stickle, from the great state of Oregon, and we've got York Clissman from, well, I guess he's actually from Belgium area. Is that right, York? What part of Belgium are you? I mean, what area are you from? I'm not too good at geography, so.
I'm born and raised German, grew up in Hamburg, and moved when I was in the Navy for 8 years. I moved to Brussels in 1990, and then I stayed in Belgium, and I live now in Leuven, which is a city about 18 miles east of Brussels, the capital of Europe.
Great, that helps us out. And then we have Dave Baxter, who is from on an island out around the Seattle area. And it's been my joy to make acquaintance with all of these brothers. And today, again, we're just going to be addressing some very, very important questions. You know, there's kind of a glitch in the history, kind of a missing link in the history regarding our founding fathers and the American Revolution and its association with what happened later. And I'm not going to get into that because I'm going to let these guys do it. But we're going to turn this over to Walt Stickle. And the first question that we have is probably going to blow some people away because they don't know what it is. But I'm going to read the question, and then I'm going to have Walt just cover this. But why is the history of the Carroll family so important as it relates to the Founding Fathers and the American Revolution? Welcome aboard, Walt.
Well, thanks, Larry. My name is Walt Stickle, and I live here in Oregon, and I'm the webmaster of Grand Design Exposed. So a lot of what I'm saying, if you want to go up and read further, it's right there on the Internet. But, you know, when Larry invited me to come speak about, and he sent me these eight questions, the first one hit me right between the eyes, and that's, why is the history of the Carroll family so important as it relates to the Founding Fathers and the American Revolution? Now, everybody that's listening to this, when you listen to this, you have to ask yourself the question, what do I know about the Carrolls? There were three Carrolls, John Carroll, the first Archbishop of the Catholic Church here in the United States, Daniel Carroll, who was in Congress. He was elected to Congress. He was also a Freemason, but he was a Catholic, and he's the one that gives the land where the Capitolium, the Capitol, is built today. And then we have Charles Carroll. Now, Charles Carroll was a neighbor to George Washington. Charles Carroll was the largest landowner and the wealthiest man in the colonies. And he was the only Catholic to sign the Declaration of Independence. And he lived... He was the last of the signers that passed away. He lived to be 95 years old. Now, you see, I want to make it real clear that if you've never heard of the Carrolls, and what is the reason, why are we trying to explain and put the Carrolls in our historical view? When we've heard of George Washington, John Adams, Jefferson, Franklin, Thomas Paine. Why haven't we ever heard these of the carols? I want to make it real clear that I am not trying to be negative against the carols, but I feel fully that they are justified and have the qualifications to be just as much as the icon of the founders of this country as the icons that I just mentioned. And see, these were all Catholics. And prior to 1776, the Catholics couldn't say Mass in public, and they couldn't hold public office prior to 1776. And 99% of the colonies were Protestants. They weren't Protestants. They were Protestants. When you say Protestant, it takes the meaning off of Protestants. Protestants aren't protesting anything, but a Protestant is. And those 99% of those colonies were Protestants. They had just escaped religious persecution, and they knew who, and they were coming out of the Dark Ages. And there was less than 1% that were Catholic. Now, with that little introduction of the carols, and to get a little mindset and a little view of what was going on in 1776, we, as Americans, very few know anything about the Dark Ages. Very few know anything about the Inquisition. You see, and it was the Roman Catholic Church that was behind the Inquisition and the Dark Ages. The Protestant Reformation gave us the light to come out. We had a small flicker of light, and we got the Bible. The Reformation, the Protestant Reformation, the most important thing we got was the Bible. And that's what those 13 colonies were operating on. They all 13 of them, right in their constitution, right in their each one of them, that you could not hold office. You had to be a Protestant to hold office. You see, this is very important. Now, what I've just told you, the truth sounds stranger than fiction. Because what I'm trying to do here is to incite a little bit of research on your own to verify everything that I am teaching here today. Now, I have put a book together. It's called The Vatican Jesuit Global Conspiracy. And it's available. You can go up to granddesignexposed.com. And you will find, it's very easy to find the links that you can download this little booklet. Now, this booklet is 138 pages of some of the key dots. See, I don't want to try to connect dots. I want to explain the dots and have the listeners connect the dots. Some of the best research I've come across comes from Catholic sources. You know, I am going to briefly mention, and it's in this book, and you can get a free book. I will send you a free book through the mail for the first, I don't know how, I got to put a limit on it, the first 10 people that send me an email at feedback@granddesignexposed.com and want an email, or want a book, I will send them a book. And matter of fact, Larry has a copy. And we're going to be reading out of this book. We're going to be reading from a Catholic publication. And it's a small article, and I don't know if we'll get all the way through it. I think we can. But I put this in the book. And I call it The Hidden Founders of the American Revolution. And I wrote a little introduction. I wrote this paragraph. I say, now, I would like to introduce you to the hidden founders of the American Revolution. Chris Pinto has made a documentary on the hidden faith of the founding fathers. To understand why I call them the hidden founders, just ask yourself, first, who are the Carrolls? And what part did Charles, Daniel, and John Carroll play in the American Revolution? Now, this article is on the Carrolls. On the Carrolls is right off a Catholic education website. To find the source, just do a Google search on the title of the article, The Catholic Founding Fathers. We'll take you right to it. Now, this article is entitled The Catholic Founding Fathers, The Carroll Family. To answer Larry's question, you know, this is, who are the Carrolls? It's written by Charles Carroll Carter. He's a descendant of the Carrolls. It goes like this. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, James Madison, Patrick Henry, Benjamin Franklin. Nearly every school child recognizes them as the founding fathers. But there were a great many more founding fathers, even if their names are not so familiar as the above. Several of these lesser-known men who played key roles in the creation of the United States of America were Catholics. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, James Madison, Patrick Henry, Benjamin Franklin, nearly every school child recognizes them as the founding fathers of the founding fathers, signers of the Declaration of Independence, framers of the Constitution, heroes of the Revolutionary War. Now, this is my comment. Again, dear listeners, see, the reason for the broadcast is to introduce the Carrolls to you because you didn't get it in your education. But this comes out of a Catholic publication, and they know who the Carrolls are. They know their part in the American Revolution. Now, back to the book. There were a great many more founding fathers. However, even their names are not so familiar as the above. Several of these lesser-known men who played key roles in the creation of the United States of America were Catholics. Chief among them were three members of the Carroll family of Maryland, Charles Carroll, the only Catholic signer of the Declaration of Independence, his cousin Daniel Carroll, and Daniel Carroll's brother, John Carroll, who became America's first Catholic bishop. Now we're going to cover. I'm saying this is not on the article, but then now the article turns to the three Carrolls. Out of the book, Charles Carroll of Carrollton, 1737 to 1832, was the most illustrious and best known of the Carrolls. He was the only signer whose property Carrollton was mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. Carrollton was the 10,000-acre estate in Frederick County, Maryland, that Charles Carroll's father had given him on the return to America from his education in Europe. He had been all the Carrolls. I'm saying this, it's not in the article. All the Carrolls, when they were young men, 12 to 15 years old, went to Europe. And they were educated at, help me, York, that, how do you pronounce that, Jesuit college in Belgium?
You're not talking about St. Omer's, right?
That's St. Omer's.
St. Omer's, they were, yeah.
Yes, they were all educated at St. Omer's. Okay, back to the article. At the time he signed the declaration, it was against the law for a Catholic to hold public office or to vote. Comment, listeners. This is my comment. Did you know this is right out of a Catholic publication? At the time he signed the declaration, it was against the law for a Catholic to hold public office or to vote. See, this is not a Protestant view. This is a Catholic view. This is something that 99% of Americans don't realize because they just weren't taught. Although Maryland was founded by and for Catholics in 1634, in 1649, and later in 1689, after the Glorious Revolution placed severe restrictions on Catholics in England, the laws were changed in Maryland, and Catholicism was repressed. Even though, and this is my comment, even because of the Glorious Revolution, we don't have time to go into the Glorious Revolution. All you have to do is Google Glorious Revolution 1688, and you'll get all the reading you want in the Glorious Revolution. But understand, even though they were of the 13 original colonies, which one was a Catholic charter? It was Maryland. But even though they were a Catholic charter, they were, on two different occasions, they almost lost their charter. But they were governed by Protestants. And especially when the Glorious Revolution of 1688, and because, dear listener, we don't have time. I'm trying to stay to the carols. But you see, I'm going to give you a historical fact. England is the only country that's ever had a Protestant government. The United States of America is a universal government. With the Bill of Rights, it has Protestant principles, but it's a universal government. It's not a Protestant constitutional republic. There's nothing in the Constitution that protests Rome. Rome has equal footing. And it might be a little bit more interesting now when we've seen the visit of a Jesuit Pope on the 24th of September in 2015. Back to the book. Catholics could no longer hold office, exercise the franchise, educate their children in their faith, or worship in public. With the Declaration of Independence, all this bias and restriction ended. Charles Carroll first became known in colonial politics through his defense of freedom of conscience and his belief that the power to govern derived from the concept of the governed. He was a staunch supporter of Washington. And when the war was going badly at Valley Forge, he was instrumental in persuading the Revolutionaries' Board of War not to replace Washington with General Horatio Gates. Carroll supported the war with his own private funds. I want to repeat that. Charles Carroll, supported the war with his own private funds. He was widely regarded as the wealthiest of all the colonists. The wealthiest of all the colonists. It's just a big dot. You got to remember, he was the wealthiest. He had the most to lose. With the most to lose back to the book. Now, this is their this is Catholic, coming from this Catholic article, educational page. With the most to lose were the fight for the independence to fail. With the most to lose were the fight for the independence to fail. Carroll was greatly acclaimed in later life, and he outlived all the other signers of the Declaration. He lived to be 95 years old. Now, his cousin, Daniel Carroll, see, Daniel Carroll and John Carroll were cousins to Charles Carroll. Daniel and John were brothers. Daniel Carroll of Rock Creek, that's 1730 to 1796, was a member of the Continental Congress, 1781 to 1783, and a signer of the Articles of Confederation. He was a delegate to the Constitutional Convention and one of only two Catholic signers of the United States Constitution. The other Catholic signer was Thomas Fritzman of Pennsylvania. At the Constitutional Convention, Daniel Carroll played an essential role in formulating the limitation of the powers of the federal government. He was the author of the presumption enshrined in the Constitution. That power, not specifically delegated to the federal government, were reserved to the states or to the people. Reserved to the states or to the people. Daniel Carroll later became a member of the United States Congress, 1789 to 1791. He was also a member of the First Senate of Maryland, where he served up to the time of his death. He was appointed by Washington as one of the first three commissioners of the new federal city that is now known as the District of Columbia. In today's terminology, he would have been considered the mayor of D.C. In my comment, he also donated the land where the Capitol building sits today, the Capitolium, the temple of worship. Now, John Carroll is very interesting. This is and when you understand the true history of America, it becomes it doesn't read like what you were taught in high school. It was always everybody was taught how boring high school, how boring history was. Well, they weren't being told the real history. The real history is intriguing. And the truth is stranger than fiction. We've all heard that term. Now, John Carroll, 1735 to 1815, Daniel Carroll's younger brother was educated in Europe, I could say 26 years, joined the Jesuit order and was ordained a priest. He founded a private school for boys and named it after the town where it was located, Georgetown, a port on the Potomac River that later became part of Washington, D.C. He went on to be elected by all the Catholic priests in America to become America's first Catholic bishop. He later became Archbishop of Baltimore. In any procession of American bishops, the Archbishop of Baltimore always goes last in recognition of his role as America's oldest dais. In 1789, John Carroll founded the college in Georgetown that later became known as Georgetown University. All your big politicians, if you go up on the internet, they're making visits to Georgetown University. And he mentioned dioceses. It was the first dais. In 1789, they carved the United States up into five dioceses. Today, in 2015, there's 195 dioceses. As you read along, you know, and you've seen the Pope's visit. You've seen the Pope's visit and the influence that the Roman Catholic Church. The diocese represents the shadow government. And the United States is carved up into 10 provinces with the Jesuits. Back to the book now. During a period when the Revolutionary War was going badly, Washington asked John Carroll to join a mission to Canada to seek the support of the French for the colonies. Benjamin Franklin, Samuel Chase, and Charles Carroll of Carrollton were the others on the four-man mission. While it failed, it established a relationship with the French, much influenced by the Catholic faith they held in common with the Carrolls. It bore fruit years later in Yorktown, where the largely Catholic-financed French fleet cut off supplies to British General Charles Cornwallis, and Washington was able to force Cornwallis to surrender and bring the war to an end. Now, listener, that fleet, that French fleet, was 8,000 French Catholics. What we're trying to point out is the influence of the American Revolution and the Roman Catholic influence. These Carrolls were very fundamental in the founding of the United States. And one other little story is when the Carrolls, Charles Carroll and John Carroll, were coming back from Canada, Benjamin Franklin took ill. And John Carroll took care of him for 6 months. Now, again, dear listener, why haven't we known about the Carrolls? They were just as much a founder, as just as much influence than the icons that were taught to us all our life. Now, back to the book now. John Carroll was intimate of Washington. He wrote a prayer at the time of Washington's inauguration, asking God's blessing on the President, Congress, and government of the United States, a prayer still very much in use today. Out of the gratitude for John Carroll's support during the war, Washington gave a modified version of the seal of the United States to the institution that is now Georgetown University, and that seal is still in use. And if you go up on the internet, go to page 108, you will see a picture of the Great American Seal in 1789 and Georgetown Seal in 1789. George Washington gave it to Georgetown. Maybe Georgetown gave it to George Washington. The closing statement is what's very interesting here. And this is coming from a Catholic perspective. And this is a question that I want all the listeners. This is the last sentence in this article. In any article, it's usually the leading paragraph that tells you where you're going, and the last one is the conclusion. Now, this is the conclusion of this article. Despite their enormous contributions, he's talking about the Carrolls, despite their enormous contributions to the American founding, the three Carrolls somehow fell below the radar screen of recognition as full-fledged founding fathers. Listen to this. Perhaps that was because they were Catholics in a country and a culture that for many years was overwhelmingly Protestant. How overwhelmingly Protestant was it? 99% were Protestants, and less than 1% were Catholic. Now, that is the conclusion of this article, and it was, like I said, it was written from a descendant of the Carrolls. So this isn't some article that I'm trying to be biased to the Protestant view. This comes from the Catholic view. The Catholic view, the Protestant view, have one thing in common. They have been erased out of the history books. This little article that I just read, I would say 98-99% of Americans don't know who the Carrolls are.
Yeah, Walter, I have a question, if I could. This is Larry. One of the things I think I'd like for you to talk just a little bit about is question five, and maybe York can jump in on this too. And with Pope Francis being a Jesuit, I think this is really relevant. Why is it so important that Pope Francis is a Jesuit, and also the fact, is it not correct that all the Carrolls that you were just talking about were Jesuit trained? Could you touch on that a bit?
Yes, you can say, I mean, John Carroll, the first Archbishop, had 26 years of Jesuit education. The other two Carrolls, Daniel and Charles, had, I think, between 12 and 14 years.
Wow.
Realistically, they were all Jesuits, all three of them.
And what is the difference between a Jesuit and another order like a Franciscan order? Because I know that our audience, we've talked a little bit about the Jesuits, but could you just do a brief, York, why don't you do just a brief definition of what the Jesuits are and how they came into being? Just a quick profile.
Okay. To understand the role of the Jesuits, you have to know where the Jesuits come from. And the Jesuits is an order that was founded in 1534 by a Spaniard of the name Ignatius of Loyola, or Indigo Loyola. He was a Spaniard, and when you go through the internet, you will come across a lot of deception saying that he was a crypto Jew, which is an absolute lie. He came out of an old noble family of Spain. And when you want to learn about Ignatius of Loyola and the founding of the Jesuit order, I can everybody advise to turn to an American writer who wrote a book called Rulers of Evil. That writer is F. Tupper Saucy. And he very well explains the rise of Ignatius of Loyola, who founded the Jesuit order in 1535 with five or six other companions at that time that he had. And they got a papal acknowledge from if I'm not mistaken, Paul III. I don't have the right pope name right here, right now, but it's in the book Rulers of Evil, and you can listen to that on my YouTube channel, Juggler66, or get the book and download it for yourself. It's free, available on the internet, and you can have that. And the point is that we are speaking about the time of 1540. So what was the time of 1540? We have had the starting of the Reformation in 1517, when Martin Luther in Germany nailed his 95 theses against the Roman Catholic Church to the church door at Wittenberg. And in 1529, with the Diet of Spires, we have for the first time appearing the word Protestant in history. Because there, a lot of German noblemen protested against Charles V and against the Roman Catholic Church and did not sign the papers they needed to. And by that, a lot of noblemen, a lot of countries, a lot of kingdoms broke away from the yoke of the Roman Catholic Church. And they recognized these early Protestants, they all recognized, on basis of the Bible that Luther translated in 1521 and 1522, the New Testament on the Wartburg in Germany, they all identified the papacy, the office of the papacy of the Roman Catholic Church, as the biblical, historical, and prophetic Antichrist. And that, of course, was a blow to the power the Roman Catholic Church held at that moment all over Europe. Because the Roman Catholic Church, the Pontifex Maximus, the Pope, gave the crown to every king in Europe. There was no ruler unless he was approved by the Pope. And if he didn't obey anymore, the Pope had the power to do away with the king. And one interesting story is, of course, some people maybe know that about the way to Canossa, about Henry IV in the years about the first millennium, when he went over the Alps for 4 days in the winter to pay penance to the Pope and say, I was wrong not to acknowledge you. That's another interesting story. But if you want to really know about the Jesuits, they were founded in 1540 to counter the Reformation. So there was a Reformation that took part by people mostly coming out of the Roman Catholic Church, people like Luther and others who were in the Roman Catholic Church and came out of it because God had touched them on the shoulders and said, if you read my word, you will see that you are in the wrong church. And that's what happened. And therefore, the Roman Catholic Church needed a response to this Reformation. And that was the Counter-Reformation. And by 1540, the Pope acknowledged the Jesuit order. And when he did that, he even cried out, the Pope at that time, Hoc est dictus Dei, meaning this is the fingerstroke of God, referring to the fourth oath of induction, the oath the Jesuits take when they are in a ruling position, the oath those people take as a oath of obedience to the Pope. And the Pope's response was, this is the fingerstroke of God. Of course, you have to ask yourself, which God is he talking about? But to come to a short conclusion, because we don't have that much time, I just want to quote what Napoleon Bonaparte said. He lived between 1769 and 1821 and was Emperor of the French. And he made the most exciting statement about the Jesuits in just a few sentences. I'm going to read that to you, and then your people will, our listeners will understand what the Jesuits are. Napoleon said, quote, the Jesuits are a military organization, not a religious order. Their chief is a general of an army, not the mere father abbot of a monastery. And the aim of this organization is power. Power in its most despotic exercise. Absolute power. Universal power. Power to control the world by the volition of a single man. Jesuitism is the most absolute of despotisms. And at the same time, the greatest and most enormous of abuses. End quote.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you, York. That was very well done. And I, Dave Baxter, are you still with us?
Absolutely.
Well, Dave, you had made a comment the other day that just blew me away, and I'm sure it will blow our audience away, too. I know it will. You made the statement that the American Revolution was nothing more than a counter-reformation, and now what we have is, since York and Walt have described the involvement of Jesuits at the onset of our country, can you just kind of, explain a little bit why you made that comment? I think it's self-explanatory, but I want you just to expand on that a little bit. The American Revolution was nothing more than the Counter-Reformation.
Okay. I don't know how much time I have.
Well, we've got about 5 minutes. Which is not a lot of time, but it'll give you a little chance to kind of, because, when I heard that statement, I thought, wow, that's pretty powerful. Go ahead.
Well, it came from the standpoint of who benefited. And there's a couple of different ways that you can approach it. When you see the Roman Catholic involvement in this, and particularly the Jesuitical involvement, and the difference spiritually between the other Catholic orders and the Jesuits is the intense process of Loyola's spiritual exercises. And if you look into spiritual exercises, I mean, before they become a Jesuit, they go through a process of extreme indoctrination. And these spiritual exercises are just like hypnotism. It's the same mechanism. And everybody is seeing someone hypnotized, and then the hypnotist can give a keyword or a command, and they will walk around and act like a chicken. And then they bring them out of that trance, and they have no memory of it. So this process goes on before their training as a Jesuit, in their preparation, and then afterwards. So it's reinforced. So you have to take in that aspect of the Jesuit training. And I said that because another part of hidden history is the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause together of our First Amendment, and the intense debate and the various amendments that were trying to be put through. And that's the part of the First Amendment that reads that Congress shall pass, shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting of the free exercise thereof. You know, so the first part prevents Congress from passing legislation respecting the establishment of religion, and then they split it into a second half, which inherently prohibits the government from preferring one religion over the other. And it's the battle that was going on at that time, before we even got the Bill of Rights. It took a lot of time in that process, and the first thing that had to be settled was religion and the battles that went on. And not a hidden part of our history, which is like the hidden part of the carols, which goes hand in glove, is that they tried to establish state-supported churches. And then you would pay your taxes, and then your taxes would go and support your church of choice. And they have a similar system over in Europe to this day that is like that, where the church is supported by the state. And the reason I mention that is that they had convinced people that a church could not exist or flourish without the support of the state. And at one time we had four different congregations that were submitted in a bill to become the established churches of America. And so this is the same system that works so well for the papacy over in Europe. And so they were trying to establish that because then, as the Jesuits always do, they would infiltrate and control. And then they would change doctrine. And it'd be very easy because who's signing your paycheck? You know, and if you say anything they don't like, well, you're out and another guy is in. So they were trying to set up that mechanism because if you control the pulpit, okay, you're going to control what people are thinking, and therefore you're going to have control over the legislative process of the government at the same time. And they were trying to get that wedding between the two. So when you look at it and you look at the efforts that were made prior to that and who actually benefited from the establishment of freedom of religion, as Walt has talked about, you have to factor that in, and you can see the forces, and it was predominantly religion that was the driving force behind all this. And essentially, with the Jesuits having no place to go in the world because they had been kicked out of, you know, every country at that time, that opened the door completely to America to come and work and establish without any interference at all. So
there's what, it was very, you know, coming full circle. not to interrupt you, but coming full circle, it has been very effective. I mean, just like Walt said earlier, it was really somewhat shocking to me to view now a Jesuit pope, because prior to, we had the white pope and the black pope, and those who've studied Jesuit history know what that's about, but now we have Pope Francis, a Jesuit pope, come full circle, and you see 1.5 million people in Philadelphia swooning over a Jesuit pope, where at one time, like Walt said, in this country, we were 99% Protestant. So, Dave, the program, the modus operandi, worked pretty good, didn't it?
Sure it did. They didn't get everything that they wanted. It slowed down their process. But the Jesuits are nothing if not patient, and they plan out decades in advance their strategy. They make the Japanese look impatient. So, yes, the seeds were sown at that time.
May I make a comment to you?
Absolutely. Go ahead, York.
Dave started talking about the Constitution and about this, I think it's the Second Amendment or what, when he said Senate shall make no law regarding religion or first, yeah, regarding religion or establishing thereof. So then you only have to ask yourself, who gained anything with the founding of the United States of America and the Declaration of Independence, when it states also there yet that you have freedom of religion? As long as there were the 13 colonies, overwhelming, as Walt said, with 99% Protestant and only 1% Catholics, who were not allowed to have mass in the open public, and who were not allowed in any open office or public office to serve for the government, the freedom of religion put the door open for Roman Catholics to have all these rights they were deprived of in the colonies at that time. So now ask yourself again, who gained with the founding of the nation of the United States of America?
The Roman Catholic Church.
No doubt about that, when you think about it, and when you do a little bit of your own research, I agree.
Very good points. I want to thank all three of you for coming on today. You guys have done a really focused answer to question one, is why is the history of the Carroll family so important as it relates to the Founding Fathers and the American Revolution? And Walter, you did a really good job of giving a brief history and profile of Charles, John, and Daniel Carroll and their relationship to the other key Founding Fathers. We need to have another broadcast specifically as it relates to the relationship to the Founding Fathers, including George Washington. That's a whole broadcast. And also, we need to talk more about, you know, why is the founder of Georgetown University so important? We talked on it, we touched on it, but when people see that the foreign policy of the United States government is really controlled through Georgetown, and then really what I want to really get, and I think on one of the broadcasts, we definitely want York and Walter to cover, is the contrast between the eschatology of futurism and that of historicism. And I know that's going to be a very controversial subject for our hearers. I know that most people that listen to, you know, Weatherby House Church have come from either a premillennial or pre-trib or post-trib or mid-trib, but, you know, we need to be educated about what the Protestants' eschatology was. And it was primarily a historicist view, and I don't want to get into all of that today. And then the other issue is, with the understanding of Bible prophecy, and if you're looking at it from a historicist view, then how is that going to change your interrelationships with, and I use this term broadly, with the ecumenical evangelical church at large? It's going to bring about a lot of separation. You know, the Bible says, come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord. Touch not the unclean thing. And then we're also going to be discussing you know, even though we don't hold a futurist view, you know, I tell people, you know, if you read through the 24th chapter of Matthew, and then you look at where we are at today, and the denial of the fact that the 80 plus popes in the past have been antichrist, you're going to have a problem, and you're going to be easily swayed. So we're going to have to bring this broadcast to a conclusion. But what I want to do is I want to give each of our guests 1 minute to have concluding remarks. And I'll start with David, and then we'll go to York, and then we'll have let Walter have the last word. Go ahead, Dave.
Well, much of this history you have to really dig for. And it's in the dusty, musty books that you'll find. And when you look at the history that is generally published, okay, it is what it is. It's propaganda that is a basis for forming your understanding of our society. So that's how I would sum that up, that you need to look into these sources and look into this information for yourself, and you're going to have to dig deep.
Good point. York?
Yeah, thank you, Larry. First of all, I want to state that a lot of people today do not know their Bible anymore. And when they do not know the Bible, they often cannot see how history is reflected in the Bible. For that we have, for example, the book of Revelation, with a lot of prophecies for the end time. But when you don't read your Bible, you don't understand your Bible, you don't understand that. And then when you go to the normal public schools and are being indoctrinated with Jesuitical studio ratiorum and learning against learning, those are terms that you can learn in the book Rulers of Evil by F. Tupper Saucy to understand what that is. I don't have the time to explain that right now. And you don't have the Bible as your basis of authority, then you will understand how the whole world has become deceived, has gotten deceived, as it is written in the book of Revelation. And the whole world wandered after the beast.
That is excellent, and that's a really good point. And we're going to finalize with Walt, and then we're going to bring a conclusion to this broadcast, recognizing that we are going to, with Stickle, Glissman, and Baxter, that sounds like three attorneys, Stickle, Glissman, and Baxter. We're going to have several broadcasts to follow up on this. Go ahead, Walt.
Well, I just want to thank you, Larry, for letting us share on sermon audio, and I think we give a real good presentation in an introduction to the carols, and to understand, you know, and maybe I'm going to leave everybody with this thought, you know, I think the Hidden Faith of the Founding Fathers by Chris Pinto, I think it's been a very popular documentary and well done. But now that we know a little bit about the carols, I just want to leave my comments with a question. What was the hidden faith of the Founding Fathers?
That's a good question. And I think, you know, it's a great question to leave in the ears of our listeners to further reinforce them to do more research, like Dave and York said, that we have to go to the Bible as our regulating principle for everything. But having history to back up the Bible just further authenticates our faith. So thank you all today for this great informative educational time. And we look forward to doing several of these broadcasts in the future. God bless.